Tom Gibbel joins us now, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Hey, Tom, welcome back. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, boo, boo, hoo, John.
Do I need to ask you what that was all about, or was that just Halloween and no more?
That was just Halloween. Ooh, I was being a ghost, even though I'm dressed up as a doctor today.
Really, is that what you're going as, Dr. Gibbel?
Yeah, we have a costume at the costume thing at the office, so I came as a doctor.
And is that okay? Speaking of hiring trends, I want to talk to you about that, but you're the kind of office where people are encouraged to dress up for Halloween?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I just think that, number one, you see some creativity out of people that you didn't know were really funny and creative, and that's always a plus when people see a different side of others. Yeah. I like that a lot. And I think if people like it, participate. If you don't. I just think we've gotten to this world where it's so overanalyzed. It's Halloween. It's kids laugh for a reason. They're allowed to have fun. Why can't adults?
The 2024 Hiring Trends and Challenges report you just published. You published a report about hiring trends and challenges. What did you find?
Well, I think there's a lot. Is that finding skilled workers is really the number one challenge that companies have, whether it's IT or blue collar. And we've talked about the immigration challenges, but that's really where it tends to be is the three biggest areas are finding skilled workers, then the compensation requirements in this economy right now, and then candidates who fit your culture. And if you can hit all three, you got a home run, but it's hard.
Culture, what does that mean?
Well, it really depends on the organization. You know, I think if we had somebody who started work today on Halloween, they'd probably think that we're a goofy place that you can dress up and have fun and laugh all the time. But we're also a place that works really hard and we manage to results and we have fun because we achieve success and growth and work hard. And so for me, I believe that there's a difference between benefits and perks and there's a difference between culture and behaviors. And culture is a mentality and a set of standards. And
I wonder how How do you determine that? I mean, because my understanding is there are a lot of questions you can't ask anymore. And maybe the answers would be difficult to interpret anyway. How do you identify the cultural fit of a prospective employee?
Well, I think what you want to do is explain how things happen at the company today. And so often employers will ask behavioral interview questions and they'll say, tell me a time where, you know, you had to accomplish A, B, and C on a tight deadline. How did you do it? And then you have the employee tell you and you try to gain some knowledge. But very rarely does an employee ask behavioral questions of the company. And you know, how does the company respond or how does the department or the manager respond when there is turnover in the group? And, you know, they may say, we obviously try to refill the position, but we spread the work out amongst the existing staff. Now, if an employee doesn't like that and doesn't want to have more work, if somebody turns over, then they shouldn't take the job. But what happens so much is we live in this society today where people think that there's a unique situation for them. So people say, well, I want this job, and I'll still behave however I want when I get there. And that's the problem that exists.
Okay, Tom, not as much time today as usual. We've got more to talk about next time. Tom Gibbel is the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Dr. Gibbel, have a nice Halloween.
Don't forget to get your physical, preventive medicine, John.
Philip Weiss is here to tell us about that, the president of SciFarth at Work. Hi, Philip. What's a grab-and-go worker?
Hi, John. It's a term that, like you, many business owners had never considered or heard of until recent months. And it's really a reflection of employees' reluctance to come in quite as often to the office as bosses expect of them. Because in many industries, as you know, the clarion call from managers and the CEOs is, we now want you in 3 days, 4 days, even 5 days a week. And what employees are doing is trying to find a workaround that meets the requirements, but gives them that remote work experience they've grown in some cases to love. So the grab-and-go worker, bottom line, is someone who comes in the morning, grabs coffee, tea, a drink, schmoozes a bit, makes themselves visible, and then disappears out the back, goes back to work remotely. So this is not people, John, who are completely dismissing work. They're actually doing the work, but they want to do it where they prefer to have their work relationship happen. So it's grabbing something, saying hello, and leaving out the back.
And do the bosses endorse this? Are they aware of this? How do the employers feel?
Yeah, they're not happy. For them, it is certainly a worrisome trend. The whole goal, according to many bosses, of getting people back on site in person is to create, whether it's camaraderie, creativity, a critical mass of people working together in the same place. The grab-and-go phenomenon really cuts against that. And what's fascinating, John, is employers have been quick to write down in the attendance policies, we now expect you to be in the office 3, 4, or 5 days a week. But they haven't been as careful to identify how many hours on each of those days. So in essence, they've created quite a loophole. So employees can satisfy the letter of the law and still leave quickly. And one employee that spoke to us said he has it timed down to a science. Comes in at 9, he actually brings coffee for two of his bosses, does the requisite snoozing, and then heads back home, and he'll use as his Zoom backdrop a picture of the office. So others, like clients, managers in other locations, think he's back at work when he's returned home.
You would think, though, I know each case is different, but the boss would maybe swing by your office and realize you weren't there. It's amazing if they're doing this, you know, surreptitiously, that they're able to get away with it.
Yeah, that's a really great insight. And there's no question there's a certain level of risk behind the strategy. It's also more effective for the employees and the industries where people are in and out of the office for other reasons, such as for sales calls, multiple meetings, brainstorming with other branch offices in the area. Those people have the best chance of getting away with it for the long term. But companies and bosses have already seen the trend, which means they're noticing it. They're starting to call out people, and they need a better approach, which really comes down to a clear attendance policy and explaining to people why we want you in the office these hours, not simply to come in, greet us, tip your hat, and leave.
Are there incentives that sweeten the pot, like, you know, we're having lunch catered in today, or I don't know what happens in an office that would maybe encourage somebody to stay or go in, but are they doing something like that?
Yeah, and some of those incentives have worked quite well for companies. Just as you say, it might be the free food. It might be setting up a game room with the kind of activities that draw people together. It's also been brainstorming sessions. Surprisingly, companies have found that when they can show employees that better results come from working together, they have better enforcement. We also find, remarkably, that praising your employees in person to their face is a remarkably effective draw. Getting that recognition directly encourages employees to be there so they can hear it again and again. So no question, John, you want to use everything at your disposal, but what you don't want to do is punish all people who are working remotely and are permitted to do so by giving all the people at the office all the good opportunities.
Oh, that's a good point, Right.
That's been a knee-jerk reaction from some bosses.
Although underlying all of this, I guess, is that the battle is still being fought, isn't it, about working at home, working in the office, hybrid, not at all. I mean, that's still being decided, isn't it?
It is. And I think your nomenclature of a battle is so apt, John, because we were asked recently at a legal conference, who is winning this battle? Is it the employees who want to work elsewhere or the bosses that want them back? And candidly, that battle is still being waged. The final decision hasn't been made because there's some jockeying. And this trend, the grab-and-go trend, the drop-in-and-dash trend, is really just one manifestation of that battle that really needs to be worked through on both ends.
Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work, Seyfarth, seyfarthatwork.com. Philip, let's talk again soon. Always interesting. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. And once again, Tom Fortino joins us. He is heard regularly on WGN Radio. He's the founder and principal at the Alpha Wealth Group and the host of This Week in Wealth, Sunday mornings at 7 a.m. on WGN Radio. Hey, Tom, welcome back.
Well, good to be here, John. Thanks for having
me. You're handing out the big candy bars. You get a lot of folks at your house, Tom?
You know, we don't get a lot. We're on a cul-de-sac, but and a steep driveway. So I give out the large candy bars. So if anyone's listening, come by. We got large candy bars.
Cul-de-sac, steep driveway, lights out. Tom pretending like he's not there. We don't get a lot of trick-or-treaters, so he has to eat the candy bars himself. Tom, talk to me about the Fed. What do you expect is going to happen here on interest rates, please?
Well, I think the consensus is, and I would agree, I don't think much is going to happen with rates. Some of that has to do, too, with, I think, the fact that there's been a lot of this on how the Fed's work is being done by the bond market, right? And so with rates going up. And so I think they're sensing that they're not going to do much. That's what I think.
Yeah. And I think they kind of signaled that a while ago anyway. Mm-hmm. Do you think that another rate hike, though, before the year is out is going to happen?
You know, that's always we have to kind of wait and see how things go. I think just in general, you know, when you look at the bond market and what's happening, because they're doing some of the quantitative tightening, it's somewhat problematic. Some have argued the Fed kind of is losing some control, and I think to the extent there's some truth to that, because they're seeing some of these auctions and what's happening in the bonds. You know, people have to keep in mind, you know, the bond market's bigger than the stock market, and so bonds are sold on the market, and so when the demand goes down, interest rates can go up. We have to see what happens. There's a lot of kind of moving parts here right now, or things that are happening underneath the surface, just beyond the Fed, maybe losing some control.
That's an interesting point. The object of the game is to lower inflation. Inflation continues to go down, but at a precipitously slower rate, in an increasingly slower mm-hmm. rate. Do you think that if they didn't do anything, they would hit their target, Tom?
Well, again, we don't know for sure what's going to happen. I think it's going to be kind of, you know, again, I'm kind of saying what a lot of people are saying, so it's not unique, but I think we're going to just see this. It's kind of flatlining as far as the, and there's some of these stubborn costs that we're dealing with. I don't see it really heading down if much more from here. So I think it's going to be sticking around in this area for a while.
Markets have been kind of flat. Do you know off the top of your head on the three indices, are we up or down on the year for the S&P and so on?
Well, two are up. If you look at the S&P and the NASDAQ, they're up. The NASDAQ's probably up about 20, the S&P up about 9, and the Dow is just slightly negative year to date. But if you look over 2 years, you know, the Dow actually is the best performer over 2 years, and the NASDAQ is the worst. So it's, you know, it's always what time frame are we looking at? But over the last 2 years, and, you know, not one of those three indexes is positive.
I'm looking for my timeline is going forward a year or so. I mean, when are we going to start to see? I know we got spoiled there for a while, but mm-hmm. when are we going to start to see some improvement here?
That's a great question. we've just got a lot of headwinds. I'm concerned, of course. You always want to look for what's the catalyst going to be. The year earlier this year, it was the AI came out, and then there was some sense that things were going to get better with interest rates and so on. And you know, this assumption that they're going to come down eventually. The Fed's going to, you know, they're going to start bringing interest rates down. So we saw the market rally, and we had this conversation I think a few weeks ago. And you know, then over the last 2 months, the market's been corrected 10% or so. So you know, in the short term, I'm a little concerned. The good news is that, of course, you've got the You can stay put in the 5% or getting some interest on a portion of the money. And so that's something you can do on it. Never want to abandon the market completely because nobody can predict it. But, you know, if you want to, especially those that, you know, if you're nearing or in retirement, you want to be a little cautious right now.
Yeah, but if you're buying T-bills, you're getting 5%. You'll beat inflation. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to outperform the market. At least you would have been for the year. So that's if I had a little money right now, maybe rather than putting it into my good old mutual fund every month, I should buy treasury bills. What do you think of that?
That's a great argument. And you know, the point you're making, John, here is that's another pressure for the market, right? If someone's saying, okay, look, I can take risk, I can put it in the market. Yeah, I might be up 20, but I can also be down 20. Or I can park it in this 5% or more position, and I know basically my principal is protected, and I'm going to get a 5%. Which one do I do? And so that's another kind of pressure on this market. And I think, you know, on the bond side, you know, if we're looking at someone's portfolio on the fixed side, I don't, you know, because a lot of these asset allocations, these target date funds, they're in bonds. So you may want to consider, you know, putting some more fixed, just the strict fixed in your fixed portfolio where you're getting the 5% and not in the bond market, because rates continue to go up. If they do, I'm not saying they will, they could. You're going to see your bond portfolio go down.
And my time horizon doesn't have to be that long either. I mean, if the market suddenly started to get hot again, my money might only be tied up for 6 months, 3 months, a year. I mean,
that's right.
You could still capture your 5% and then move on. You might have missed the optimal point, but you're not a stock picker anyway, are you?
No, I mean, it's more about designing and building a portfolio that you can stick with. You know, if on the periphery you want to buy some stocks you think are going to do real well, that's I always encourage that. I think it becomes more, you become more engaged. But yeah, creating a portfolio, I think, you know, that's the whole concept of laddering. You bid a 6 month, 1 year, you know, 2 year, and then as if rates go up, you take that 6 months, 6 months from now, you buy higher rates. If rates go down, then you know, you can do some other things. So, and that's easy. People can ladder on at Fidelity, Schwab, you can do it. They offer these tools to do it. So that's the concept of doing that as well.
I said you're not a stock picker. I meant you're not a market picker. You're not trying to predict the high or the low of any given market. But are there, if you were picking stocks or sectors, Tom, do you like financials now? Do you like energy? Is there an area you think is maybe priced attractively?
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, again, it's always, you know, it's always the adage of if you're looking at some of these, I think there's been some discussion on energy. You know, it depends on it. In the short term, you have to be careful and look at some of the multiples. I think that's, you know, it's, again, you have to be careful for those that are, you know, we were just talking about in the market, you know, if you're still contributing to a plan, if you're still, you know, a few years out or a number of years out from retirement, you know, I wouldn't concern myself with these ups and downs or more what's happening in the market so much, because you're always buying in. It's the problem is, you know, again, those that are close or near retirement, I'd be a little cautious right now.
Tom Fortino is the founder and principal at the Alpha Wealth Group. He's got more time for you Sunday morning at 7 with This Week in Wealth. We'll listen then, Tom. Thanks for your thoughts today.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Steve Grzanich has more business news on WGN.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Home prices in Chicago increased for the fourth month in a row in August. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Index shows Chicago home prices up 5%, rising faster than any other major U.S. city. The index tracks 20 major cities. New York followed Chicago with 4.8% growth. Chicago saw the biggest increase in home prices since December 2022. It's a major turnaround for the area, which had been last or next to last during the period from 2016 to 2021. Ford's Chicago assembly plant on the city's southeast side is up and running again. Workers returned to their jobs after Ford reached a tentative agreement with the United Auto Workers. The employees had been on strike for nearly a month. The deal includes pay raises and other benefits, as well as a commitment to invest $400 million in the Chicago assembly plant. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business to food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And let's begin with Jordan Tepper. He started a liqueur business in Chicago called Apolog and has been on before talking about his partnership with Urban Autism, whose farmers raise celery root on the west side for one of his liqueurs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we did this summer their carrots and cocktails event, and we still source their celery root that they're actually harvesting this fall for us.
And I see your business is growing. You've expanded into the ready-to-drink cocktail segment.
Yeah, really delicious bottled cocktails. Under the Host Cocktails brand.
Nice, but that's not why I wanted to have Jordan on today. He posted something on LinkedIn, a cautionary tale if you are thinking about starting a business. We'll talk about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. And in your toolbox of life, Jordan Tepper has a suggestion when it comes to starting a business.
Yeah, do it early or wait.
Meaning?
Starting a business when you have young children is a particularly challenging time to do it.
He speaks from experience. Jordan started Apolog Liqueurs 7 years ago. His first son was born 2 years later, followed by another son 2 years after that.
I would recommend doing it well before kids were in the picture, because your startup is still going to be a startup for 5, 6, 7 years before it really gets out of that stage, or waiting until your kids are more self-sufficient.
And we may have idealized visions of how we can do it all, but that isn't reality.
I fully agree. I think I picture things in my head going smoother than the actualities of it.
On top of that, a lot of people who are trying to start a business already have another job.
I started to get fond of saying two jobs and two kids is too much.
I can imagine some women shouting at the radio right now, "Welcome to my world," because they have been struggling with the how to have it all dilemma for decades, how to have a career and a family. Jordan Tepper is one of the few men who have spoken up.
You know, I'll try to talk people out of it, and like, I rather say, if you're going to do it, here's what I do, but I can't recommend it in good faith.
And if you're shouting at the radio that he ought to try starting a business as a single parent, he gets that.
Absolutely. You know, without her, yeah, I would be drowning.
So if you're thinking about turning that baking hobby or that barbecue recipe into a business,
I think it's very challenging to do a really good job at both.
There have been a lot of thoughtful comments to Tepper's post on LinkedIn, and he's happy to hear yours too. From the farm to your belly, today's National Caramel Apple Day, or Candy Apple Day if you prefer. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. So let's focus just on another local business. C.D. Young is here, the founder of the Wild Thing Restaurant Group. C.D., it's John Williams, and you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. Happy Halloween. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Why is the restaurant group called Wild Thing?
Well, honestly, at the time, that's such a good question. I've never been asked that before. But I'll tell you, at the time, it was just two things. My husband and I liked that song, and it also felt like a wild thing to do to start up this restaurant group.
How many restaurants in the group?
So far, three, but we have big plans. We're just getting things ready to grow further.
Spirit Elephant revamps plant-based menu, world vegan. Talk to me about that headline.
Sure. So tomorrow's World Vegan Day, and that is a great day. I'm sure you have your plant-based menu all lined up for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yes, yes, of course.
But in all seriousness, it is three opportunities to have a meaningful impact in three different ways. Your health, the planet's health, and of course for animals. And there are very significant impacts you can have through a plant-based diet.
Are all of your restaurants all plant-based, or is this just a one-day feature?
Oh, no. We're 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, completely vegan in all three. But you wouldn't know it. The food is really delicious.
Give me an example. What do you mean by that?
Well, so at Spirit Elephant, which is our hot, you know, sort of elevated cuisine restaurant where it's a full service sit down experience, we have a menu that appeals broadly from everything from savory burgers and meatloaf all the way up to something plant centric like our blackened miso eggplant, which you probably can't find anywhere else in the country. And everything in between. My personal favorite right now on the fall menu is our rendition, or I should say Chef Jorge Esparza's rendition of Penne alla Vodka, which is just spectacularly nuanced in its flavor and creamy, and it's wonderful.
I don't know what that is. What kind of food is that?
So Penne alla Vodka is Italian fare. We do food that's vegan from all over the world. We're sort of inspired by dishes rather than areas of the planet. So that's an Italian one, and it's sort of a tomato cream sauce, John. It's you have to try it. It's wonderful.
I see. Now, Spirit Elephant, that's in Winnetka, right?
Right.
And then the other restaurants are where?
So one is in Lincoln Park, Chicago. The other two are more fast casual.
Right.
They are sort of, you know, more along the lines of a Chipotle-style restaurant. So they're called Elephant and Vine. And their food is everything from chicken sandwiches to my husband's personal favorite is the Ella Burger, which is like the cheese. He calls it the cheeseburger from growing up. He's very addicted to it. And we have bowls that are a little more health forward, and we have wraps as well.
I see. But when you say a chicken sandwich, do you mean chicken or do you mean something that approximates chicken?
It very much approximates. It's made from soy and a little bit of wheat gluten, which gives it that chewy, meaty texture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you know, we have many people who are shocked that our food is vegan, which is fun. So you wouldn't know it. You'd order what you're. That's why we use those names, because we want you to know what you're going to get. And so we use sort of the names that'll give you that familiarity.
Understood. And then, do you do cocktails, beer and wine, or is that not vegan?
Oh, my God. That's funny you say that, because it's not always vegan. But at Spirit Elephant, we have a very robust cocktail and now a new wine list program. Not all alcohol products are vegan, but ours are. And we have a very well-loved craft cocktail program. We have things like our Ella Fitzgerald, which is like our take on a Paloma, to our Elephant in the Room, which is a drink with a smoky ice beer, like a old-fashioned sort of drink, but our take on it, that's one of our biggest sellers. So we definitely have a very full cocktail program.
And tomorrow is World Plant Food Day or something like that? Is that what you called it?
It's World Vegan Day tomorrow. November 1st is World Vegan Day, and it's a great chance to highlight what I mentioned earlier, that you can help your health, the planet's health, and animals just by eating a plant-based meal, one or three tomorrow. It doesn't matter how many.
C.D. Young is the founder of the Wild Thing Restaurant Group. Well, it sounds like good advice year-round. SpiritElephantRestaurant.com is the website. C.D., good luck, and thanks for the insight.
Thank you so much for having me, John.